This is Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence, your 8:03 tee time every Sunday morning right here on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5. Backspin Golf is brought to you by Clark's Pump and Shop, Lexington Parks and Recreation, Edwin Watts Golf, and Georgetown Advantage Air. Let's join your host, Matthew Lawrence, for Backspin Golf.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Sean, I'm just going to say this about 10 times. I just like to, you know, see what I can come up. Good morning, everybody. It's so early and I'm out of my mind already. It's Backspin Golf here on ESPN Sports Radio, 1392.5. We have a couple of great guests lined up here. Keith Hirschland, the former producer for the Golf Channel for over 20 years. I'm going to speak with him in a couple, just a minute or two, about what happened with Jon Rahm in the memorial and the way it was covered by the PGA Tour and CBS. I always think of him when there's a coverage issue, which is often. So Keith will join me. Then our buddy Dan Houser from the Stiff Shaft, stiffshaft.com down in Florida, will join me and we'll discuss all kinds of things as we always do about golf. And of course, from Man of War Golf, my partner, Matt McCrady, we're going to talk a little today about the mental aspect of the game, which is probably, Sean, the strongest part of my game, as you well know, because mentally there are few people tougher than I am. I can't believe I didn't just bust out laughing at that. Anyway, that'll be our show today. I just want to say a quick word about what went on this past week in golf. I don't really care about this tournament in South Carolina going on with the PGA Tour. It's a U.S. Open tune-up for some, like Dustin Johnson is playing. I don't really care. But there's a 21-year-old that's playing from South Africa who was leading the first couple of days, anyway, in driving distance and shots gained off the tee. He's 21. And his average on Thursday, the first day, his longest drive was 376, and his shortest one was 338 or 336, something like that. And he has the most beautiful, balanced swing. It's not like that pumped up bulk guy who violently swings at it. So I got a lot of work to do out at Man of War Golf to get my swing to look like his. Anyway, this is all. All right, joining me is coming up is my buddy Keith Hirschland. You all ready? All right, here we go. I'm so excited because anytime I get a chance to talk to my incredible friend Keith Hirschland, it's a great, great morning. And when all this stuff happened that we talked about with Jon Rahm and the tour and what happened with CBS, and I always think about, among other times, about what would Keith Hirschland think about this. So as I do, I said, why not just see if he'll consent to join us on Backspin here. He cleared some space on his incredibly busy schedule. And here he is now, one of my absolute idols, Keith Hirschland, joining us. Hi, Keith.
Hi, Matthew. You're a nice man and you're a funny man. And you know that that whatever is on my schedule, I would clear it for you. So I appreciate you thinking that I might have something to add to this discourse.
Oh, boy. Well, and of course, people that listen to Backspin or The Drive know Keith as just a best-selling author. Sixth book is in progress.
It's a sequel to Murphy Murphy. So you will be making another appearance. You may not have as big a role in this one as you had in the last one, but you're certainly going to be a major character.
Oh, that's fine. Murphy Murphy is that's for my life is complete being in Murphy Murphy the way I was. Here's the thing. All your books are incredible, all of them. But as everybody that listens to the show knows, you were a preeminent producer with the Golf Channel for over 20 years. I always think, I tell you all the time, when I'm watching a tournament and I hate what's going on, which is a lot of the time now, I always think about you and how you would shoot something or how you would handle something. And then I scream at the TV and I go, that's Keith would understand. So when this thing with Jon Rahm happened at the memorial, and I'm not going to go into it again. Everybody knows what happened. When they pulled him off the green after the 18th hole, and Jim Nance, of all people, said, I have no idea what's going on here. My immediate thought was, I got to ask Keith about this. What are your thoughts about the way the PGA Tour, and I guess CBS, handled that whole thing with Jon Rahm?
My immediate thought was then, and then after, you know, chatting with you a little bit yesterday, was that it's like that old, I guess it's an attorney adage, or it came from somewhere, but it's, you know, never ask a question that you don't know the answer to. Immediately the thought was, how could whoever was in the chair, and I'm guessing it was probably Sellers, put Jim in that position? How could he, put something, out there live that puts Nance in that position to have to say, we don't know what's going on.
Right.
You never want to put your people in that spot. When I was, and this was, obviously, I retired in 2013. So it's been, more than
a handful of years.
But it's still been more than a handful of years since I was in the chair. But I know that we always had a PGA Tour radio in the truck. The PGA Tour would give us one of their, walkie-talkie radios.
Right.
So that if there was ever any kind of a situation, we would be in the loop. Whether it was a ruling, they'd be coming down there, need a ruling, or we could tell them, we could see a player arrive at a shot and know that he was going to need a ruling. And we would be able to pick up the radio and say, hey, Tour, you're going to need a ruling at 13 fairway. Golfers right, 13 fairway. So, there was this communication going on. I don't know. I can't imagine. The Tour knew they were going to pull Rahm aside. The Tour knew that he had tested positive. I can't imagine the Tour not telling CBS, hey, guys, we've got an issue with Rahm. Right after he finishes, we're going to tell him that, blah, blah, blah. I'm making up the wording now, but I can't imagine there wasn't a heads up given that something was happening. They also had Dottie on the ground.
Dottie Pepper. Right.
Right. So there's a CBS person on the ground with Rahm's group. What strikes me as odd is that there was zero, or it seemed to be zero, communication between the Tour and their network partner as this thing unfolded, which put, and if there was communication and CBS didn't relay that to Nance, that's another, that's another issue. But it just seems like it all boils down to some sort of lack of communication along the way that ended up putting Nance in an uncomfortable position, Rahm in an uncomfortable position, the Tour in the position of being criticized for the way they handled it. All of it could have been avoided by simply, hey, we're going to do this. Then Sellers makes the decision as the producer, am I going to show it or am I going to go somewhere else? And then we'll report on it. We'll report on what happened later.
Right. Absolutely. all those things are exactly what I thought. And we should mention Nick Faldo also, not only Jim Nance, of course, but his partner, Nick Faldo, who was very critical after the whole thing happened about it, as he should have been. It was just a incredibly awkward. I've been watching Jim Nance for, as you have, for all the years he's done everything. Sure. I don't think I've ever heard him forced to say, "I have no idea what's going on," live on the air. It was amazing.
I can't imagine. I mean, he couldn't have been happy about that. Oh. And that was clearly a gut reaction on his part, because he doesn't know if they're telling Rom somebody in his family fell
which
ill,
is what or
if, you know, it's like, what is going on here? Which as an announcer, he's reacting. So that's why I'm saying that somebody put him in a really uncomfortable position. And then that domino effect of the reaction became what it became.
Right. Now, moving on to the next day, once again, they came on the air when we'd had at overnight, and they didn't come on the air really until, I'm not sure when they joined Golf Channel's coverage or when CBS picked up the coverage. They came on and just showed again what had happened the day before, without really further explaining all the protocol, all the reasons why they felt they needed to do what they did, the tour, and by extension, CBS. Nothing. And that part of it is almost more infuriating to me, almost, because I had a pretty good idea by the next day because I read everything on Twitter, obviously. Right. But so many people watching that telecast didn't know what happened. And once again, the communication this time with viewers, I thought, was terribly mishandled.
Yeah, and I can't defend it because I don't know why they made the decision.
Right.
I can only offer a couple of assumptions, which is, as you know, a terrible thing to do. But I don't know if Golf Channel addressed it at the beginning of their broadcast. I was watching the Women's Open, so I didn't.
Me watch. Too.
So
me too.
I don't know if Golf Channel addressed it. I don't know. Certainly social media addressed the heck out of it. Like you said, but that is not a reason, to your point, to have CBS not address it. If their reasoning was why they didn't explain it when they first came on the air, was that, oh, this has been talked about ad nauseum by everybody on social media and the Golf Channel, talked about it. And again, I'm making an assumption that maybe the Golf Channel did, but it's like, that not everybody's on social media, not everybody's watching the Golf Channel.
Right.
More people, because you're the broadcast partner, over-the-air broadcast partner, are relying on you for that information. So even if it had been talked about in your head, I'm talking about a producer's opinion ad nauseum, it still warrants some explanation when you come on the air to get your viewers up to speed. It would be my opinion. And I'm sure all of those things were discussed in meetings, probably from the tour and potentially from Sean McManus on down. That's not a decision that a producer makes in a vacuum. So, all those things, I'm guessing, had to have been discussed. And they decided, instead of doing a quick couple of minute roundtable with your announce team and getting reaction and figuring out how to approach this, the decision was made, we're just going to go on the air and show golf and assume that whoever needed to know about it or wanted to know about it had already known about it.
Right. Which I totally disagree with. I mean, doesn't matter. It's just me.
And they do they waste so much time on other things in every broadcast. I can't imagine why they didn't say, we're just going to spend 2 minutes on this at the top of the show and then off we go.
Well, to be fair, Keith, it wasn't that big a story. It was only a guy leading that tournament by six shots. You know, I mean, not that big a deal. I'll tell you, but as I said, it's so great to know that we've become so close that there are so many instances where I either think about you when I see a certain shot on a tournament and I go, I bet Keith would not. That's not the shot he would have picked there. Or I always think about you being able to talk. I'll say gently nudge somebody in their earpiece the way you did about shutting up, which is my biggest beef of yeah. all. And we've talked about that. We got about 3 minutes left. I asked you when we spoke on the phone, if you had ever done a U.S. Open, which obviously next week at Torrey Pines. And I was surprised that you hadn't. You've done a number of USGA events.
Right.
Is there a difference working with the USGA as opposed to the PGA Tour?
Yeah. I was never fortunate enough to do it, to be involved in a broadcast of a U.S. Open. I did, when I was at ESPN, we did U.S. Open preview shows, which was kind of my first introduction to the USGA. And then when I started working at the Golf Channel and we got the rights to do a number of USGA events, I was thrilled and supremely fortunate enough to be able to do a U.S. amateur, three U.S. women's amateurs, Walker Cup, Curtis Cup, you know. Mm-hmm. So I worked pretty closely with the folks at the USGA on those broadcasts. And, you know, I would say that the main difference was that the USGA was much more involved, I thought, in the day-to-day what we were doing and the message mm-hmm. that they wanted to, you know, to us to translate over the air for them.
Right.
There was somebody from the USGA in the truck during every minute of every broadcast, mm-hmm. and not sitting over my shoulder telling me what right. to do, but just there in case there's a question, in case there's a, you know, an issue. Again, the PGA Tour, we had the radio, and the PGA Tour was different because we did so many events throughout the year with the PGA Tour. We had established a relationship. So right. we always knew, they knew if they needed to talk to me, they could, or if there was a problem that, or yeah. if I needed to talk to them. But because we only did a couple of USGA events a year, they were, you know, much more involved in,
right.
in what we were doing from the minute we got on site right. to the minute we left. So,
okay. Well,
and I said, I mean that in a good way. That was a good yeah. thing. I mean,
absolutely. I wish, I know you're retired and you get, you know, I'm talking to you, you're on some big yacht near Tahiti.
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm always so thankful anytime I get to talk to you. And I wish you were doing the U.S. Open next week.
Yeah. And I also wish I was doing the U.S. Women's Open last week with,
yeah.
thanks to Rolex, uninterrupted coverage. Can you imagine what I could have done with no commercials? What havoc I could have wrecked with no commercials. Oh, my gosh. It would have been.
All right. You're the greatest. Just the greatest. And I will talk to you very soon. Thanks for jumping on, as always.
It's always my pleasure.
Okay. See ya.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Edwin Watts Golf.
Welcome back. Oh, boy, this is going to be fun. Because anytime that I want PG, of course, the unfiltered opinion of a golf expert, I know where to go. I go to Florida, figuratively, to Dan Houser, because anybody that is the co-founder of a website called thestiffshaft.com, that's my guy. I've said this since we first talked to him on the show. But that's my guy. We got a lot of things of our opinions to bring to Backspin Golf this morning. Good morning, Dan Houser.
How you doing?
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. Much better because I'm talking to you now about this. Actually looking at you too, which is cool. A lot of times we only get to talk on the phone, but it's much better when you can make kind of figurative eye contact, I think. That's just me. That's how I am. I'm a people person. Anyway, all right, enough of this. Let's start with, because we haven't spoken to you, obviously, since this happened at the memorial. Let's start with Jon Rahm. And unlike CBS talking about, in case you missed it, we all know what happened. I want your take, first of all, on how the PGA Tour handled this. And then we'll get into our favorite group over at CBS. But just how the PGA Tour grabbed him coming off the green. What do you think about that, Dan Houser?
I mean, how much time do you have?
Well, we got about 15, 17 minutes, something like that.
You know, for an organization that has had well over a year, I mean, this is June of 2021 we're talking about here. We've had, what are we in months 15 since, you know, the everything kind of shut down back in March of 2020.
Yeah.
For an organization like the PGA Tour to have essentially 14, 15 months at this point to plan for this exact situation and then just absolutely bungle it the way that they did is just, it's
mind
boggling. Just when you think you've seen it all as far as how bad they can handle situations, they go and do what they did last Saturday. It's just, I don't even, where to even begin on how bad they screwed that entire situation up. And in the grand scheme of things, telling him as he's walking off the 18th green was probably ninth or 10th on the list of things they screwed up with that situation. It's not even anywhere near the top of things that they did to just completely screw that entire thing up.
Well, okay. Tell me what you're thinking there.
Okay.
Because to me, I mean, I know leading up to it, but that moment of grabbing him when Jim Nance and Faldo knew nothing, that, and we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
But to do that to him at the side of the green and watch him double over in disbelief, what else are you talking
honestly,
about?
Honestly, I'm not even mad at, honestly, I'm not mad at that part, because by doing that, I understand their logic behind it, because you tell him at that point, right? And so he can get a mask on. And because think about it, if you don't tell him at that point and you let him walk to the scoring tent, he just shot the best round of the tournament. He shot, you know, an incredible round. You know, all the fans are going to want to high five him, and they're dangling over the ropes and they want to get close to him. And he might go ahead and sign some autographs or high five some guys, you know, and whatnot. And he's COVID positive. So I actually do understand the logic there. Huh. You get a mask on him. You get him away from the fans. You get him isolated as quickly as possible. So
yeah, but they walked straight through where he would have walked anyway.
Well, that's the part that, once again, they bungled it. The telling him part, I understand, because in theory, you want to get him away from the crowds as quickly as possible. However, now we're going to go to the parts where they bungled it. They put him on a golf cart with five other people. He still goes through the crowd. He still goes into the scoring tent. And mind you, they knew at 4:30 at this point and they'd already made up their mind that he wasn't going to play anymore. Why did they even let him finish the round? Yank him off the course right then and there. So what if he's not going to finish the tournament? Why does he need to finish the round at that point? So that's on the list of things they bungled.
Well, here's what they said. Hold on. Here's what they said about that. They didn't want it to be a false positive that they found out at 4. And at 6:05 was right as he was playing the 18th green. Yeah. That's when they got the second one. So the part about pulling him off the course, then maybe I can understand. That's what I
mean. But here's where they truly bungled the entire thing.
Yeah.
At this time last year, we were literally talking about COVID groups. Remember that? There were tournaments where threesomes were being put out, and three specific guys were being paired together because they had either been COVID positive the week before, or they were currently COVID positive, but they were asymptomatic. They were playing. Think about, we had situations where guys were going out as solos after everyone else had gone out. So now you're telling me the leader of a tournament a year later, mind you, with a 6-shot lead, he's going to go out. He's going out in the final group on Sunday, right? He's going out, with another guy, but he's going out last. Why at that point couldn't they send, who would it have been? I believe it would have been Schauffele would have been paired with him, I think. But we don't know for sure because he was DQ'd and, you know, he was withdrew and we don't know. So let's just assume Shoffley would have been the guy that they would have paired with him.
Right.
At that point, why can't they send, you know, redo the pairings, send one guy out solo first thing out in the morning who's 35 shots out of this thing, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
Have everyone else go out in twosomes and then send Rom out by himself. He's asymptomatic. Yes, right. He's positive, but he's asymptomatic. So from his standpoint, he's healthy enough to play. Send him out by himself. You know, keep the galleries as far. I understand there's the theory is, okay, great. Well, what if he hits a ball into the gallery? Well,
right.
You already backed the gallery up normally anyway. So what's it if they got to back him up another foot or two? Like he's right. been with his caddy all week. So at this point, if his caddy's got his caddy's got it. Like,
right.
Send him out by himself. I mean, we did this a year ago where we were sending guys out by himself. Now you have the leader of a tournament and you're not going to like even consider it. They might have considered it. We don't know. And that leads me along the lines of the other ways they bungled it. And as far as the way it went with CBS, and that we'll get to when we address the CBS side of things. But I just, yeah. And then, you know, and then well, of course there's the whole, and then there's of course there's the whole fact that the whole reason why Rom was even in that protocol in the first place is because he still hasn't been vaccinated yet, which, you know,
right.
Look, I'm not going to tell somebody what to do with their lives. I'm not going to tell somebody what they should be putting in their bodies. But if you are an athlete playing for millions of dollars every week and your job is to travel the country and go to different cities every week for playing for millions of dollars, like,
right.
How is that not just a no-brainer? Go get the shot at that point. And right. I know they said that after he found out that he had been in close proximity, he went and immediately got the first dose, but
right.
Too late. You know, it's almost
It shouldn't have taken that long. And again, we don't talk about politics or any. It has nothing to do with any of
whatever
that.
Somebody wants to stick in their bodies up to them. But
right. But apparently way more than half of the players on the PGA Tour have not been vaccinated. And so the consequences, which we saw what happened with John Rahm, however it was handled, that's a personal decision. Then, you know, if you get it or you expose somebody else to it, then that's on you.
Hey, right. Look, he had 18 more holes to play. So for us to go out and say, you know, he won. Now, granted, everyone threw up all over themselves on Sunday. So I feel like if anything, he might have won by 10 or 11 shots.
Right.
When everything was said and done. But so basically, you know, assuming he would have hung on to one, but the choice that he made to not get vaccinated today has already cost him $1.7 million, 500 FedEx Cup points, another 5-year exemption on his tour card. Not to mention the fact that it's also going to now cost him, in theory. Now, granted, if he can produce those back-to-back pop negatives within 24 hours of each other, he's out of isolation. But if he does have to ride out the full amount of time in isolation, he comes out of that one day before the start of the U.S. Open. So now he's possibly risk of not only losing that $1.7 million for the Memorial, but how much money could that cost him by the fact that he's not going to be able to properly practice for the U.S. Open as well?
Right. And we'll see, obviously, what happens this week with that. Yeah. He's scheduled to come out on Tuesday. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Of course.
All right. In the couple of minutes or 3 minutes or so, I think, that we have left, real quick, CBS, go. Fire away.
I'm so first off, I got to start with saying I feel so horrible for Jim Nance and Nick Faldo. And Nick Faldo was very vocal about his frustration afterwards. And you know what? I don't blame him one bit. And I would have been just as pissed off as him because they're seeing it the same way we're seeing it. And this guy's doubled over. And, you know, he just had a child. So was somebody telling him that his kid was sick, that his kid
had
died?
That's what I
thought. Somebody
had
died, like, you know, and they don't know. And then they're getting told afterwards, okay, it's COVID. Great. Then now we've essentially got. So they went off the air at around 6:30 or so Saturday night. They come on the air at, what was that? I believe 2 or 3 p.m. on Sunday.
Something like that. Yeah.
So that's a big window of time. You would think that somebody, whether it was Nance or Faldo or a production guy, somebody at CBS would have gone to somebody at the tour and said, listen, walk us through how you guys got from.
Right.
We told him to now he's got to withdraw and this and that, this and that. Do we get any of that when they come on the air? No. We get about a 30-second, hey, guess what? In case you've been living under a rock or been in a coma for the last 24 hours, here's what you missed yesterday. You know what, bro? We're in the year 2021. That thing was on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook the second after it happened.
Yeah.
There's no way that nobody was that was watching that golf coverage did not see that. You do not need to replay for us him getting told that. What you need to do as an obligation to the fan and as a media outlet is tell us what happened to get to that point. And right. they did none of it. And I don't know if that's on the fault of CBS or the tour for not telling him, but somebody screwed up there. And it's not the fault of Jim Nantz or Nick Faldo. I know they're probably getting a lot of crap because they're the front facing people, but somebody somewhere screwed up and it did a disservice to the fan and to the two of them as well, because they had nothing more to add. Right. And they had to sit there and give us this recap of stupidity, basically.
Even Saturday when it happened, for Jim Nantz, who has been doing the definition of veteran broadcaster,
for Jim Nantz
to actually say the words, "I have no idea what just happened," is a sin.
Yeah,
it's a sin. Mm-hmm. Even as they were waiting for Rahm to tell him on the 18th green, somebody from the tour should have, they have these things called either a phone or a headset or something, grab whoever is out on the course at the 18th green following them, grab his microphone and talk to Jim Nantz.
They could have told Dottie Pepper, who was following the group, to relay.
There you go. Nantz. Right. Right.
But yet, we find out because Dottie Pepper got told while they were still in the air. And then it's like, and then literally she tells him, and they're up against the window. They actually stayed on late as it was. They were not even supposed to be on anymore. And they're like, okay, well, we got to go. And that was the end of it. And
right.
then now, granted, once again, I'm not knocking anybody here. So then most people's first thought is, well, let me tune in a golf channel because I'm sure they'll be talking about it. And mm-hmm. at that point, they were showing that they were continuing their coverage of the Women's U.S. Open, which I would never, ever want them to
right.
get to go away from that coverage to then speak about it. But it's just like, so you're sitting there for hours.
Right.
And all, what the F just happened?
All you have is Twitter. And that's yeah. not a great thing a lot of times. So.
Well, and unfortunately, now granted, golf's gotten a lot younger, but the target demographic of that CBS audience isn't on Twitter.
Right. That's true, too.
You and I are, but there are plenty of people that aren't. So to rely, right. to have to rely on that is just what are we doing? What all are right. we doing?
OK, we still have not heard anything about how that whole thing happened. Now we have a couple of minutes left. Real quickly, what about the U.S. Open coming up? Do you have a favorite? Do you have any idea what's going to happen at Torrey?
If you had asked me at 5:30 p.m. last Saturday, I would have told you John Rahm and a runaway.
But yeah.
I don't know what type of prep and practice he's going to be able to have. So that's now a big wild card.
Right.
I would like to lean towards Rahm still just because I know he really likes that course and he's had success on it.
Right.
If I were to throw him out at that point, it's the usuals. It's the DJs. It's the Brookses. It's the JTs.
Yeah.
I think we're going to have a quote unquote traditional winner from the sense that it's going to be one of the bigger names. We're not going to have
one of the surprises.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be a type of thing where we're going to have a guy that's going to win. And we're going to say, oh, I didn't really see him in my top 10 guys that I think is going to win. I think that your typical top 10 that everybody has, I think one of right. those guys is going to come out with the win.
Right. Let me, I've never asked you this. Do you bet on golf tournaments?
Absolutely not. Not even a little bit.
Okay.
I don't golf
or any of that stuff.
I don't do much sports gambling anymore, just in general, not just on golf. I used to do
a
lot.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I used to do a lot and I would just, it got to a point where I would have to find myself rooting against myself at times, if that makes sense. Cause like I have my favorite teams that I root for. But when you're thinking with the money, you've got to think smart, not with your heart. So like there'd be times where
right.
I would be essentially rooting against my favorite team to lose so I could cover the spread. And it got to a point where it was between that and fluky things, SVP does those bad beats. I love watching that segment.
Oh,
now.
Yeah.
Five years ago, I would have been wanting
that was you.
To throw something at my TV because I would have been getting caught in those bad beats.
Yes, I did it. I threw a water glass through a TV set a long time ago. Because
and so one, I woke up one day and I said, it's ruining sports for me. I can't enjoy watching sports anymore. And I stopped it. I do fantasy football and stuff like that, but that's about,
right.
I limit it to only fantasy football only.
Right. Okay. I was just curious.
Yeah.
I didn't know. All right. Well, it's always great to talk to you peeps. It's thestiffshaft.com. We will talk soon and we'll find out what happens next week at the Open. I hope you get a chance to play this week, which I'm sure you are now. Because okay. All right. You're the greatest, man. Thanks, Dan.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Men O' War Golf, the golf improvement experts.
Okay. All right. And Sean, we'll do the close, the open and the close tomorrow. All right. Okay. All right. Here we go, Matt. Welcome back to Backspin Golf. It's time once again. I don't know why I'm doing this voice. It's time once again for our friend and partner, Matt McCready from Man of War Golf, and that beautiful thoroughbred golf course out in Nicholasville. Hi, Matt McCready.
Good morning.
Good morning. I want to start off by saying thank you to you, you know, for joining me every week, because you texted me and said, I never thank you. So I'm thanking you now.
You are welcome. I'm glad to be here.
Okay. all right. Here's what I want to talk about with you this week. The mental side of the game, or parts of the game, whatever you would like to discuss. But the mental part of life for me has always been the most difficult. So take that to the golf course. And of course, and it's not just me, it's many, many of us have this problem. There things you can't control are going to the golf course and trying to work on things while you're playing a round of golf. That doesn't, but the things, something you can work on and take it to the course is the mental aspect,
yes,
of whatever you're doing, whether it's driving, chipping, putting, whatever it is. So talk to me a little bit about, because you're an expert in all things, you're a PGA professional, for goodness sakes. So you have answers. I know you do. Talk to me about the mental part of the game, and please help me.
can do. So, you know, the biggest thing in the mental side is, number one, I know it's the hardest thing for everybody to do, but it's to not be negative. I know that sounds really easy, right? Not be negative, but
yeah,
the second that we are negative about any shot, or even before a shot, like, you know, a lot of people get really nervous about lining up and, you know, hitting a par three over water. They're like, ah, water just scares me. And the minute that you let water into your brain and let that thought of you hitting the water, you're like 10 times
you're
more
toast.
Likely. Yeah, it's going to go in the water, right? Versus if you just stand up there and you pick the middle of the green, or you pick a, you know, if you pick to go long in the green, like, and you don't even notice the water or say anything about it, you're more likely to hit a better shot and not have to be in the water and hitting three at the drop zone, mm-hmm, right?
Yeah.
But the negative side, you know, when we're like, oh, I'm just such a, you know, we hit a shot and we're like, I'm just such a terrible driver of the golf ball. We go to the next hole, we're going to hit another bad drive again because we were already negative on the last hole.
Mm-hmm.
If you can always seem to find something positive, or even just say something positive before you even tee off or hit the shot, like, you know, one of my biggest things is I pick a target out, something really small, like I want to hit this at the left side of that tree trunk in the distance, and I'm going to and make a good confident swing to that, boom, more likely to hit it. And if it falls a little right, falls a little left, be like, all right, well, it was still a great swing. But instead of getting negative, and then the negatives compound and compound and compound, and next thing you know, we're nine over as we make the turns.
Yeah. Here's something. There are a couple things that I've heard for a long time, and sometimes I can remember them while I'm playing, and most of the time I can't. But I forget who said it, but they said, talk to yourself as if you were a caddy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really good advice, because with certain exceptions, you know, there might be a caddy where they have a different kind of relationship, where they'll say to a player, you're an idiot. I just told you not to do that. You know what I'm saying? If they've
right.
been, or brothers or best friends or whatever. But most of the time, your caddy, even when you make a bad swing, will say to a pro,
that's all right. Let's go look and see what we have. You're good. We're still good. And yep, something shot. Positive.
Yeah. Next shot. Ignore it. Go. Let's go on. Let's move on. You know, you can't dwell on the last shot you just hit, because guess what? You can't really hit it again. So
not from the same spot in very few instances. Anyway, there's something else too, that many, many years ago, and any sports psychologist, and every pro works with a sports psychologist, 90% of them do.
Yes.
They will tell you, if you stand on the tee and there's out of bounds left, your brain can't distinguish between do and don't. So if you think don't hit it left, all your brain hears is left.
Left, exactly.
And there's a good chance that that's where you're going to hit it. So rather than focus on that negative, you focus on the positive, which is, let's keep it down the right center of the fairway here without even acknowledging there's trouble on the left, right?
Exactly. And being positive about that and being reinforceful and being confident about that right side of the fairway. Because as soon as you allow a little bit of doubt, there's trees on the right side too. Don't want to be in those. Yep. The next thing, who knows where in the world you're going to hit it. You're just going to spray it all over the place, you know? Right. So that's the bigger.
Let's talk for a minute about putting. And of course, the same thing applies. If you step up to the ball and think, I have no chance of making this, then you're not going to make it. But you have some stats about putting, do you?
Yeah, stats that kind of tie into the mental game of golf. So PGA Tour professionals from 40 feet on the green from the hole, okay?
Yeah.
20% of the putts finish 4 feet, 8 inches or longer from the hole. 10% of their putts will finish 6 feet or longer from the hole. So, of course, it gets a little bit closer, you know, but
right.
That's 30% that finish outside of 4.5 feet, which.
And these are the best in the world.
Yes. So right. My advice is to stop beating yourself up if you lag a 40 footer to 5.5 feet, because listen, that's pretty good from 40 feet. Okay. We got to man. And that's all about the mental side, managing your expectations. Like,
yeah,
so you and I can't step up on the mound and throw a 100-mile-an-hour fastball in the ninth inning in the bottom of the ninth. You know, we can't do that. So we can't go play baseball with our friends and expect to do that. So it's the same thing with golf. We can't expect to get up on the tee and rotate like Dustin Johnson does and hit it 325 yards in the air.
Well, I can't. I think you could, but I can't.
I don't know about that.
Okay.
Managing your expectations and saying, okay, well, 40 feet and draw you a 5-foot circle to get it inside of. 40 feet's a long way on the green. That's a pretty big green to be on. You know, you made the par 5 and 2. Okay, I just want to get it inside 5 feet. Inside 5 feet and in, pretty good from 40 feet, because a third of the percentage from the best players in the world are that same distance. So it's pretty good.
Be easy on yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. Have fun. Relax. Quick story about, I was giving a lesson the other day to a lady, and she's just been struggling hitting her driver. And, you know, you could tell she's just thinking about everything. And, you know, I finally just started talking to her about something that was completely non-related to golf. I said, you know, tell me about your work. And she was telling me about how these executives had come, and she was nervous about the visit. And she just started just swinging, just not even thinking, was telling me all about it. She was basically halfway in a sentence when she was swinging. And next thing you know, she just starts striping it. And she couldn't figure out why. She's like, I don't, what's the difference? I said, your mind has relaxed. You've stopped thinking about the consequences of a bad drive, and you're just relaxed. And your mental is in a better state, and you're just hitting it much better. So that kind of ties into just, you know, managing your expectations and being relaxed and not beating yourself up when you miss one fairway.
You know, I always say this, but we hit drives that are bad, that we pull left or block it right or do. And then you sit and watch a PGA event over the weekend, say, and they're missing the fairway by 20 yards.
Mm-hmm.
They're up in the trees. They are. Now, I know their swing speed is a lot faster than mine.
Yeah. Yes.
But these are the best in the world at what they do. And for us to get Tom Watson, I remember Tom Watson reading an article by Tom Watson who said something like, I've hit 1,000 balls a day since I was a kid and I still shoot 80. Why do any of you think you're that good?
Exactly.
And it's the truth. And yet I still struggle with this, with expectations and, you know, if I'm not chipping well and, you know, I leave it 10 feet short, my expectation, even though I haven't come to practice with you and take a chipping lesson, my expectation, because I've chipped in, you know, last week one time, my expectation is to get it close. And if I don't, I still get upset about it. It's ridiculous. Yep. It's ridiculous.
We all do it. We all do it.
Why do we play this game, Matt McRae?
I really wonder. Sometimes I wonder. When I the sparing times that I get to play, I wonder why in the world.
We all know, because then you'll hole out from the fairway, you know,
that one swing that keeps bringing you back.
Right. And a lot of times with me, it happens on the 18th hole. I can be playing really badly and thinking, I don't even want to do this anymore. And then I'll birdie 18 and I go, okay, what time am I here in the morning? You know, all of us. All right. We only got a couple minutes left. U.S. Open. And obviously we'll talk more about this next Sunday, but it's going to be kind of hard to pick somebody to win this because we don't know if John Rahm is going to be playing even. He'd be a lot of people's favorites. If he does, we don't know if he's going to be able to practice at all. He won't be able to go out to Torrey. He's won there before. Any quick thought on the U.S. Open at Torrey?
I think, you know, if you look back to it was 2008, the last time it was there. Mm-hmm. It's 7,600 yards or so. Mm-hmm. And the average score for the week was 74.7. So it was
correct.
Over par.
Correct. Time.
And I hope for the same. I want to see these guys struggle. I want to see them make doubles. I want to see Bogey be a really good score.
Yeah.
I like, there's a lot of guys I like. I like John Rahm.
As far as the pressure, play, right?
Right.
I'll tell you another secret name that I like that a lot of people would maybe not know about, but Patrick Reed and Jason Kokrak. Watch out.
All right. Hold it. The first one you're not allowed to talk about on this show.
I tried to slip it in there.
It won't happen. And not only that, forget about winning. If he's close to the lead where I have to look at him on the telecast, I'm not watching. That's how much I hate that cheater. Okay.
He is a cheater. He is.
Jason
there's
Kokrak,
a lot of thick rough this week, too. There's a lot of thick rough for him to cheat.
Did you happen to see the video of Xander Schauffele from Thursday or Wednesday? Probably, I think it was Wednesday, maybe, chipping from the rough and leaving it. It went 2 feet, and he just looks up at the camera, at the guy that's filming it. Yeah, that's the U.S. Open. That's what we want.
That's all about.
What we want. Yep. So,
private, right. Well.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk, obviously, much more about this next Sunday. We will be updating right up till the first tee time on Sunday morning, as we always do in the final round of a major. Have a great week. I'll see you during the week. And thank you again. I can't say it enough to you.
You are welcome. Glad to be here.
Okay. See you, pal. All right. That'll do it. Another edition of Backspin Golf in the books. Next Sunday, live, as always, final round of a major. I can't wait. It's the U.S. Open. Thanks to all our partners. Man of War Golf, Edwin Watts. Georgetown Advantage Air, Commonwealth Credit Union, Clark's Pump and Shop, Dan Cummins in Paris and Georgetown, Kentucky CBD, Gearheads, Lexington Parks and Rec, and Jake's Cigar Bar. Boy, we are so lucky. Have a great Sunday, everybody. Stay tuned for The Bottom Line with Brad Taylor and then The Angelo Show. Talk to you next week. It's ESPN Sports Radio, 1300 and 92.5.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by
Lexington Parks and Recreation. Book your tee time at one of their five public courses at lexingtonky.gov. Play Golf Lexington.